Welcome to the Real Estate Trainer Podcast with your host, Brian Eisenhower. This podcast is brought to you by Eisenhower Coaching and Consulting. ICC provides customized and structured coaching and training programs for real estate agents and team leaders, representing many of the top producing agents in North America. ICC also offers broker and owner consulting on agents recruiting, training, and retention. For more info, visit EisenhowerCoaching.com or find us on Facebook.
A lot of you guys will wonder, like, how does that agent get that listing appointment? Or how did he list it at that price? How did he get him to take that price? How did he get that buyer to meet him in a buyer consultation appointment before going out and looking at property? How did that agent get all those buyer agency agreements signed? That, ladies and gentlemen, is usually based upon superior skill development. That agent that is getting all those things done has practiced some scripts, dialogues, and talking points enough that that becomes second nature to him or her. Does that make sense? So what I'm going to talk to you a little bit about is, well, a lot of you have been exposed to it. It's referred to as, I've heard it in a lot of courses called the language of sales before, where you're teaching about sales delivery and the different ways that we can communicate with our clients to get them what they want. And I think that's when we talk about the language of sales and we talk about scripts and dialogues, when we talk about mirror and matching, when we talk about embedded commands, downswings, trial closes, those are all different techniques for communicating, for speaking to another person. And it's not designed for the powers of evil. These techniques are actually designed for the powers of good. Yet, it's often going to be perceived that we are somehow being manipulated, or we are tricking people with our scripts or our techniques to get them to do things they don't want to do. And that should never be the case, ever. However, I do see how people are confusing it, right? So for example, you might need to drop 20 pounds and get in better shape. Someone's told you that, I don't know. So if I could tell you some things to get you to do some things you don't want to do, i.e. eat healthier, wake up early, go to the gym, all painful stuff, uncomfortable activities. But if I could get you to do some of those things that you don't want to do, it's still in your best interest because ultimately it's the results you're after. So for example, if I could get you to call 20 people in your SOI this morning, it may not be what you want to do, but it might be just the uncomfortable steps you need to take to get the results you want, which is a listing today. Someone else, like a client of mine, might want to list their property for sale so they can get moved into another neighborhood right next to their grandparents so their kids can have grandparents growing up. But they may not like the activities that they have to do to get to their grandparents' neighborhood. They may not like putting their house up for sale sooner rather than later. They may not like the price I tell them to list it at. There's lots of uncomfortable steps that I, as a leader, a coach, a motivator, an agent, need to walk them through, motivate them through, for them to get the results they want. Because most people want these glorious results, right? But most people do not go through the uncomfortable steps to get to those glorious results. If you can be the one person that helps them do it, you're a magical person. You have an amazing skill set. So what I'm going to talk to you about today is some techniques you can use to get people to agree to do uncomfortable things so that they can get the ultimate results that they want. This is not used to manipulate people so you can get a big commission at the expense of your client. That is not what this is for. Nor will it work for that. Nor will it work for that. Generally speaking, you do bad stuff, you're going to get bad results. So let's make sure we do good stuff with it, okay? So here's what I want to, so I want to talk to you about some of these tools first, and then I'm going to share a lot of these tools with you so you have some examples of them. But I want to start with some of the basics first so you can see what some of these people that have been schooled and trained and coached by some of the best sales coaches out there, you can see some of the tools they're using, okay? So anybody have any questions about this, thoughts, concerns?
I think it's a great subject.
Go ahead, Albert. What's that?
Oh, I was just saying, I think it's a great subject.
Okay, cool. Yeah, this is different. I'm switching gears a little bit here. But I'm going to go ahead and switch them. Okay, so let's go ahead and take a look at my screen. And this is from one of our sales courses here. And we talk about the concept of what we call a downswing. See this here, a downswing. And I think the reason I show you my text is so you believe I'm not making this crap up. So you guys can actually realize that these are terms. And I did not make these terms up. Like, these were taught to me by someone too. I cannot remember who, but someone taught me these things. But you can see here, a downswing is actually, the way that I look at a downswing is what you're doing with a downswing is you are asking a question with a period at the end of it. So if I were to teach you what a downswing was, and then I were to say to go out and use 5 downswings today with 5 different people, wouldn't that be great? What did I just do at the end of that? Wouldn't that be great? I asked a question, but I used a downswing, which means every word I used dropped in tonality, right? So rather than asking a question how it generally should be asked, wouldn't that be great? That's an upswing. Wouldn't that be great? Doesn't that sound like uncertainty to me? When I use an upswing and I say, Philip, wouldn't that be great? I went to an upswing. To me, that sends a message to Philip that he better think about that because I may not be right. That's what an upswing does. An upswing, when you ask a question, the way a question mark is traditionally designed to operate with an upswing at the end. So where do you guys want to go to lunch? Do you guys want to go? Do you guys really want to go see that movie? See how I'm conveying uncertainty? What I'm saying is, why don't you stop for a minute and actually think about this? Because your idea might be better than mine.
Brian, you got to see the chat. Philip's right on. You remember Anchorman?
Yes. I'm Ron Burgundy. Oh, yes. I'm on Burgundy. Totally. That's totally it. That is totally it. Yes.
That's great.
Yes, that's the opposite. That is the opposite. That is classic. Yeah, that is very good. Ron Burgundy? Yeah, and that's the very concept of what can happen. I mean, that's the power of that question mark. So if you are in, I've seen it happen a bunch. Here's where I see it happen all the time. Let's say you're presenting offers to your seller and you actually ask your seller, so what do you want to do? What? Like, there are agents who think this is good. Here's all the offers. I presented them to you, but you're my principal and I'm your agent. So what do you want to do? Oh, I cannot believe, like, the fact, and I'm going to tell you, this is what most agents do. The majority of them. You talk about crazy town. I mean, imagine 50 monkeys running around in a school bus. You just threw the keys in the door. That's what you did. You're like, here, drive that thing. What do you want to do? I don't know. How about we sniff some nitrous oxide? I don't, you know, what on earth? You better tell them what to do. Here's what I suggest. Wow, that's got to, like, whew. Thank God he's got a suggestion. See what I'm saying? So there is a little bit of steering we do here. There's a little bit of steering we do. And with the downswing, if I want someone to start agreeing with me and move forward with me, ultimately towards a signature on something that earns me money, I better start talking in downswings so that I get them nodding with me. See, if I say to Philip, you're going to go out and practice 5 downswings with 5 different people after we get off the phone. Does that sound okay? How's that sound? Wouldn't that be great? Sound good? See how every one of those is a downswing. So what it does, rather than ask you a question that makes you think you have to all of a sudden pay attention, oh, wait a minute, he needs me. I better get involved with this. I may not want to go down that path with him. So rather than throwing that huge red flag up in the middle of your sales presentation, why don't we start using some downswings? Because then what's going to happen is, as I'm saying all these downs, does that make sense? How does that sound? You're going to see the person across the table from you is nodding with you. Yep, I'm with you. I got you. I'm with you. Almost anything you say next, I'm going to say yes to now, because you got me nodding. And once you put someone in a popcorn machine, as Chick Hearn used to say, it is hard to get out of a popcorn machine. You're right here. You're stuck, nodding. Yes, anything you say. Yes. Yes, I do want to sign that buyer agency agreement. Yes, I will list at the price you say. You see what I'm saying? So we use a downswing to get some automatic yeses. And the way that we get automatic yeses is through a little trick called a tie down. See these tie downs over here? These are some examples of different tie downs. Do not fear. I will put this in the chat room. And all we do with tie downs to create a downswing is when we ask a legitimate question that would normally have an upswing, at the end where there's a period, you just put a comma and then ask the tie down. Doesn't that make sense? Don't you? Wouldn't we? Isn't it? That seems like the safe play, isn't it? See how I took what normally would be a question, put a comma on the end, and just tied it down with a downswing. See that? Now I get them nodding with me. Make sense? See how I do it all the time anyway? I just did it to y'all. And all of you started nodding. It was like bobbleheads across the screen. That's what happens. I do it so much I can't help it. I do it in front of large groups of people. It's just, I'm used to tying down statements. And understand why we do that. Think about how many times you have heard from some sales trainer that you should never tell and sell. You should never use periods in a listing consultation. Every sentence should end in a question mark. And that's true. The top agents know how to just ask questions. And the benefit to constantly asking your seller questions is every time they're nodding and saying yes. So we're on the same team all the way through. So long as you're constantly and frequently stopping and asking questions to ensure that they are engaged with you and are on board with you. Does that make sense? So the more questions you can insert into a listing or buyer consultation, the better. And I will tell you that the top of the top only ask questions. There are no periods in that presentation. That means there are no statements and there is no telling at all. That's Jedi ninja stuff right there. Make sense? And the way that we are able to keep asking questions is tie downs. Tie downs are how you cheat, because it's a way to say a statement and still ask a question to get their agreement. So yes, we do put your listing on 350 different home sites syndicated through our multiple listing service. So that's where most of our marketing dollars are concentrated. Does that make sense to you? See how I took the question, answered it back with a statement, tied it down with a question to get their agreement so I could move forward. Still no statements, only questions because of the comma and the tie down. Now, when we tie down anything, we're going to downswing the words over here, right? So it's don't you, wouldn't you, isn't that right? If you've got three words, we got to actually step each one down. Isn't that right? Wouldn't that be great? Or it could just be, isn't it? And there's your tie down. So we can keep in conversation. So we can actually control the dialogue and we stay in curiosity with it. There is another aspect to this I'm going to show you over here, and it's called the trial close. You see this trial close column over here right next to it? Very similar to a tie down, but it's a little bit more inquisitive. Okay, so this is when we're leading up to the actual close, and we're going to try a close out to see if they're with us. Okay, so let's say I'm in a buyer consultation and I'm about to get them to sign an exclusive buyer agency agreement. Okay, so I might, if I'm getting worried and I know I need to get them to sign this agreement and I'm not quite sure if they're with me and they're going to sign the agreement, I might try a few trial closes to kind of see if they're nodding with me, to see if I can get that popcorn machine going. Make sense? Because if I can get them nodding with me right before I pull out that buyer agency agreement, they're going to sign it. Because that's the way it works. This is where I'm going to refer to a school of thought called neuro-linguistic programming, or NLP. Okay? So they'll refer to it as neuro-linguistic programming. I've heard it called natural language processing. Same idea. Neuro-linguistic programming, natural language processing. What it is it's the study of how certain communications interact with the brain. Okay? And there are certain things that we can do and that people can do to communicate you, to get you to say yes and to get you to say no. I mean, the whole idea of subliminal messaging is accomplished this way too, right? So we know that if I can ask a lot of trial closes and I can get someone saying yes, like, so, you know, in that buyer consultation appointment, I might lead up by saying, hey, you don't pay me anything. I get paid by the seller of a property when the house closes. And the seller has already specified how much they are willing to pay to any agent that represents the buyer in the multiple listing service. Does that make sense to you? Now, that's a great trial close because I'm about to get them to sign a piece of paper that says the exact same thing. It's a buyer agency agreement whereby they agree to have me represent them and get paid by the seller. So I'm setting that signature up by explaining the agency relationship and asking, does that make sense to you? Do you have any questions so far? Does this sound good? Those are all trial closes that I am asking, like a tie down at the end of a sentence, to test, to put the question through a trial to determine if I'm ready to go close yet. Does this make sense? And that by definition is what a trial close is. A trial close is testing the waters to see if you get a nod from them. If they say yes, that means we're good to go. If they say no, like, well, I'm not sure. I mean, if the seller pays you, might they pay other agents less? You know, like, how much do they pay you? Like, that means that we should not have closed. We were about to get a no if I had whipped out that piece of paper for them to sign. I better address this issue first. Make sense? That's why we call it a trial. Because if one point along the way, with all the downswings, the tie downs, the trial closes, what we're trying to do is engage them and get them agreeing and making sure that every minute or so we're asking them a question so that we can confirm that they are in agreement with us. And once they're in agreement with us, we can move forward to our next point. But if for some way along the line, we forget to ask them if they're on the same page as us and if they agree with us, and if we forget to ask them, they might start to have questions about something. Like, maybe I shouldn't sign this agreement. Am I tied into working with you? What if I find a house from the builder or a new home subdivision and I want to buy that? Or what if I go to an open house this weekend? Or what about your cousin that just got a real estate license? Didn't you tell her we're going to work with her? All of those possibilities might make it why they're not on the same page with me. So I want to isolate those and talk about them. Hopefully before I get rejected. I would like to know their concern before they give me a flat no, which is kind of hard to recover from. That's why we have trial closes. We're testing to make sure all is good. If all is good, only then can we move forward and proceed to list their house or get the buyer agency agreement filled out or sign the counter offer or sign the request for repairs or whatever thing we're trying to close on. And there's tons of things. We can test throughout the explanation process with tie downs, trial closes, and downswings. Make sense? Everybody get that? Let me show you one other trick that gets melded in with these guys, okay? And that is the famous embedded command. The embedded command, okay? You will see embedded commands, which are very much a part of neuro-linguistic programming. And the reason they are is because with an embedded command, you really have to believe in NLP, which it is proven by science, so I don't know why you wouldn't. You really need to believe in NLP to get how neuro-linguistic programming works with embedded commands. But I will tell you that in a downswing or in a trial close or in any type of script, we can insert embedded commands. For example, if I'm in a listing presentation, I might use the words list with me 15 times in my listing consultation. And it might look something like this. So once you list with me, we'll get the house up for sale. And most of my clients that have listed with me have found that we get them the highest price for the least amount of money. So depending on what your date is, when we want to put the house up for sale, after you list with me, I expect to have an open house the first weekend and the second weekend after you list with me. Do you guys see how I said that a little bit differently each time? I said list with me like 5 or 6 times. Every time I said list with me, I stopped and paused for a brief second and got quiet because that draws attention to me, which is what I want, because I want them to pay attention to my embedded command, because I've embedded a little command into my script. And that command is list with me. It's subliminal. It keeps hitting them throughout the script. Throughout the entire presentation, I keep saying list with me. And as I'm saying list with me, I'm usually tying it down or there's a question in there. So guess what they're doing while I'm saying list with me over and over again? They're starting to nod as if the words listing with me elicits a yes. So that's how you sneak embedded commands into a listing or a buyer consultation. Once you sign with me, once we list with me, we say it over and over again. And I realize that sounds super cheesy, salesman-y, all that kind of stuff. It sounds that way right now. It totally does. But it will not sound that way when you get good at it and you use it in a listing consultation. It will actually work. That's why so many people use it and use all these techniques. And that's why they've been taught for 40 and 50 years, since before I was probably born. That makes sense. So we put an embedded command in there, like list with me, like sign the contract, over and over again, right? And over time, those commands, so do remember when you say it, I do want to say this, we actually pause before the command, right? So once we get wrapped up here, you sign the contract to list with me. See the pause? And then I pause afterwards. I even say list with me. Notice that's a downswing. Always a downswing, always a command, right? So for an embedded command has to have a downswing. And a command cannot have an upswing because that's a question, not a command anymore. So when we do an embedded command, we always downswing the words. Once you list your home with me, that's a nice embedded command. Okay, this makes sense to everybody? Okay, so in our embedded commands, we're gonna put them in And I would practice these guys. I mean, if you do not use embedded commands in your listing consultation script, I would get a couple embedded commands and use them, and use them forever. And you don't need to change that at all. But that will increase your conversion rate. It'll also increase your ability to price homes better, because you're going to sign better listings when you use these tips. And I also want you to practice your downswings. I want you to practice that around people you love. So tell your wife, your spouse, your husband, your kids, your friends that you're practicing them. And I want you to practice downswings. And I want you to practice some embedded commands in there too. So practice tying things down. Practice not using periods. Practice always asking a question when you're done talking, so that you have to wait for a response. And hopefully it's just a nod with a yes. All right, real quick, I want to move to one other. And this concept, I am jumping over to our ISA course. And I want to talk about probably the most important skill, and that is called mirror and matching. And with mirror and matching, this is where we as agents are going to mirror and match the way our clients communicate, so that we actually modify our communication style to match their preference. Okay. So again, this is not done to manipulate. This is done to provide a higher level of customer service. Because if you are always communicating to all of your different clients the exact same way, do you really think that they all appreciate that method of communication? Let me ask you, if I start talking at the normal rate of speech that I like to talk at, it'd be about this speed. I'm a very, very fast talker. I have to actually purposely slow my rate of speech down so that other people can understand what I'm trying to say. So I talk very, very quickly if people don't unabash me. If I don't have to be in a dialogue with somebody else, I'm going to talk at this rate of speech. And when I talk at this rate of speech with people, here's what happens. Their eyes do this. If you talk too fast for someone, that's what they do. I know, because I've watched thousands do it right in front of me. happens all the time. Now, there are other people like that, that I'm sure, I don't think I've met many of them, but I bet you there are other people out there that talk as fast as me. And with those few people, I can be my natural self and talk that fast. But with the rest of you, it's totally unappreciated. You know, like, you guys don't like it. Now let me give you one that drives you nuts. You ready for this one? Now imagine you just took a listing in Redondo Beach because a new rocket scientist just got hired to work at Hughes Aircraft. And rocket scientists talk like this, very slowly. It's driving all of you nuts. You just want to fill these terrible spaces in between every one of my words. Now imagine if I was your listing agent and I showed up to list your house for sale, and I sat at your kitchen table and put all my paperwork down. It's gonna be a while, gang. You see what I'm saying? That's a freaking nightmare. So know the temperature of who you're talking to. Because if my seller is a rocket scientist at Hughes Aircraft, I better slow it down. So I better listen to how he spoke to me on the phone before the appointment. And if he spoke slow, then I start speaking slow because I'm accommodating his communication preference, right? If I want him to understand me so much to choose me to list his house, or to list his house at the price I want him to list it at, I think it's probably in my best interest to make sure the guy comfortably understands me. Just like I wouldn't get up in front of a room full of Spanish speakers and speak English. That wouldn't accommodate their needs. I would have to change my language to speak their language so they would understand me. So the idea that you're going to change who you are and how you communicate to better accommodate the way your client communicates is not manipulative, it's customer service. Do you see this? If you don't see it, let me go back to the rocket scientist again and let you feel what that was like. Because I was not accommodating your needs. I was talking way too slow for you. And it got to the point where half of you started checking email, which means I know you're not listening to me, which means I know you're not going to list with me. So what I'm going to do, first thing I'm going to do is the most important thing is to check out speech rate. Okay, so I want you to write that down. Speech rate. That is the most important thing. How fast they talk. Are they a really fast talker? Are they a real slow talker? Generally speaking, if they're a fast talker, they are going to be a very extroverted person that is a D or an I behavior on the DISC behavioral assessment. They're going to talk quick. They're going to be social. They're going to have no fear and no filter. It's just all going to come out if they talk fast, which means if you're not a fast talker or you happen to be an S or a C behavior, you need to pick it up. And that's hard to do until you've tried it. Have you ever picked up your speech rate before? If you've never practiced it, you need to start. I mean, I'm not joking, because how else are you going to practice matching someone who speaks faster than you? Because you'll drive me crazy if I have to wait for you. Can you imagine what it's like to list my house? I mean, that is a D behavior. Better walk in that door, or someone who knows how to mimic one good, because I don't like my time wasted. And if you start showing me all the marketing activities you're going to do for my house, I'm going to throw you out the front door. Make sense? Like, I don't want to hear about all that. Like, I want you out of here. The minute you walk in my front door, I want you the hell out of my house. I want you to close me, because I want to get on with my friggin' TV shows. I want to watch Netflix. So get out of my house. Before you even come in, I want you out. And you're going to see most D&I behaviors feel exactly the same way. So don't think they want you in their house forever. So don't think you have to go through this long presentation. Not everybody wants you in their house. Now, S behaviors, oh, they want you for a bit. You S behaviors, you know, you like people. You genuinely like people. So when they come in the house, oh yeah, they want to get to know you. You're going to be there for a bit. So know that. Know you've got an S. Know you've got a C. Know who you're going to meet with. Be prepared. Don't tell me every one of your listing appointments is 1 hour. I don't see how that's possible. There are different types of people in the world. How are you going to list a $5 million home of a rocket scientist at Hughes? Because that's how much they make, and those are the type of houses they have. So how are you going to do that listing presentation in an hour when he's a C behavior who wants to show you all the French hinges he put on his kitchen cabinets by himself, one by one? He wants to show you all that. So you better slow your roll, adjust your rate of speech, and slow it down so that C behavior can jive with you. And he realizes you're putting spaces in between your words. And what does that mean to him? It's like an opening for him. It's like a ray of shining hope for him. Those are the chances for him to speak. That's what those little spaces are in between your words. It's a chance for him to get a word in edgewise. So that's why I slow it down and put the words in between spaces, so my S's and C's can engage in the conversation too. Make sense? But if I got a D behavior, I'm gonna fly. I'm just gonna let it rip. Here we go. Here we go, just fast as I can go. Get me in again, because I know that's all a D cares about, time. That's all they care about, guys, time. Fast, 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 get me out. I'm the same way. I mean, I care about people just as much as an I or an S or a C does. This is my behavior. My behavior is move fast. I like convenience stores. I like drive-thrus. I like the way the world is trending. It's trending to people who want things fast. I love Amazon. So get used to it. Pick it up. and slow it down when you have an SC behavior in front of you, right? So that's how, so speech rate's how we're gonna tell the man, either we're gonna speed up or we're gonna slow it down. Or they're gonna be so close to us, we can just use our normal rate of speech. Does that make sense? So it's gonna be one of those three things there. Then be careful with your volume. That would be the second thing I would look at. If they're yelling, yell back at them. If they're quiet, be quiet with them. But whatever you do, don't yell at a quiet person. Or don't be quiet at a loud person. Because you're not matching them. You want them, if they're yelling, believe it or not, you want them to feel comfortable yelling. So yell back at them. Now they feel comfortable with the way they're communicating. And the more that your client feels comfortable with you, you increase the likelihood they're going to sign the stupid piece of paper at the end of the meeting. You just want them comfortable as all get out. So you don't want them to feel like they have to be on their best behavior, or that they have to speak quietly, or that they have to sit a certain way. You want them just to be comfortable so they sign the document. So match whatever they're doing so they feel comfortable with what they're doing right now. If they're talking fast, catch up with them so they can keep talking fast. If they're talking quietly, slow it down. Talk quietly so they can be heard, so they feel comfortable talking quietly. If you're in person with them, look at their physiology. That's another big one. If they're sitting up straight, you sit up straight. If they're slouched, you're slouched. If they're leaning forward with their elbows on the table, about like they're about to jump across it at you, then you do the same. But if they're leaning up on the table like this, staring at you, don't you be back here in your chair like you're hiding from them. Don't do that. That makes them feel awkward. And if they're back in their chair, don't you be climbing over the table like you're trying to attack them. That's going to make them feel awkward. Remember, the goal is to always make them feel comfortable so they stay there and ultimately sign something. Make sense? So that's your physiology. Like, you know, it's how do you know how, I mean, for example, if you're talking to an S or a C behavior, they're going to keep their hands on their lap. So you keep your hands on the lap. But if you're talking to an I behavior, here we go. Here we go. Now it's the fireworks show. Distraction, 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 distraction. That's what someone who talks with their hands is to someone who doesn't. Like, I can't even concentrate on what you're saying because I'm worried you're going to punch me with one of those fingers. You know, it's like, oh, oh, oh. Now, I'm a talker with my hands. So I do. I talk with my hands. But I have to sit on my hands when I'm talking to someone who's quiet, calm, refined, orderly, thorough, an S or a C behavior. Then I have to sit on these things because this makes them nervous. You'll see it in their eyes. As I'm doing all this stuff, they're like walking through a minefield. So match their physiology. If they talk with their hands, then you can talk with your hands and you can play patty cake or whatever. And what'll happen is everybody will be comfortable talking with their hands. It's like, man, I don't know why that guy, I want to hire that Eisenhower guy. I just click with him. And you wonder why. All my tricks. Of course, they're all going to click with me. I've thrown like 9 embedded commands at them, all with downswings, tied down every sentence. They've been nodding and agreeing with me more than they've ever agreed with anyone in their whole life. I've matched their tonality, their speech rate, their physiology. I've even used my favorite mirror and matching tool for neuro-linguistic programming, and that's called keyword or phrase backtracking. Keyword or phrase backtracking. You use the words that they use right back at them a lot. And they will like you because they like the words they use. So if you've ever met like Have you ever met someone that's like too old for the language they're using? Like, that's radical. It's like an 85-year-old person saying that that's radical too much, or that's tubular or something. Like, what? Huh? And, you know, but I'll tell you, if you pick up on it and use it back, that is radical. Now you're affirming that you like the words they're using. Oh my God, it drives them crazy. And they don't even know why. You wouldn't even know why. But when someone does it to you, you'll love it because it shows you are paying attention. And you're just, by restating it and pointing it out, oh man, it's crazy. So for example, if they say something to you over and over again, like, we don't want to give it away, we don't need to sell, there are some words I might use back at them. Now, I realize you don't need to sell, but, or I can understand how you don't want to give it away, but to maximize your proceeds, wouldn't it make sense to, see what I'm saying? So I'm using the words they use right back at them a lot. And what that does is it gives them a sense of validation that I actually am listening and that I might have a point anyway, despite their concern. Because if you want them to forget about what they're worried about, like your commission or the price of the house or when they're going to list it for sale, whether it's now or 6 months from now, you need to show them that you at least heard their concern, which means you're going to provide them validation by saying it back to them. And if we can get them to keep nodding with you through that, then we can make a point on top of it that they will actually listen to, and they will move past that issue or concern and finally do what they need to do to get the results they want. Okay. There is another aspect to this. So I've talked about physiology and mirror matching. I talked about rate of speech, most important. I talked about volume. That's a pretty easy one. I've talked about keyword or phrase backtracking. One more I want to put in there, and that's tonality and pitch. Tonality and pitch. So if you get someone who's like a really deep talker, I might just drop my octave down a little bit. See, I'm down a little bit lower right here. Or if I get like a squeaky Barbie girl, I might go up here, get right up here close to her. It's a little higher than me normally up here. Gonna make her feel comfortable. Believe it or not, all of that works. Watch their tonality, watch their pitch. Match their anger, match their emotion. If they're sad, you're sad. If they're angry, you're angry. So if they're mad, if anybody's ever mad at an appraiser, you get mad at the appraiser too. You with me? Do not, and I repeat, do not say, oh, relax, calm down, this is pretty normal. Boy, don't do that. That's taking a big can of gasoline and throwing it on top of them and lighting it on fire. Do not tell your clients to calm down when they're angry. Don't tell anyone to calm down when they're angry, ever. That is bad Hollywood stuff. That is out there in society. If you want to get me mad, wait till I'm angry and tell me to calm down. You're going to get really, really, really mad, Brian, then. Because what you just told me is that you don't agree that I'm mad. And you don't even care why I'm mad. You don't even want to hear it. You're just telling me, shut up and calm down. That's going to tick me off. No validation whatsoever. And yet they do this in the movies. Left and right, Hollywood tells you that the hero is the guy who says, relax, I'm going to keep it together. Okay. He's certainly not the psychologist. So don't tell your clients to calm down. Instead, get angry with them. If it's, no, don't get angry at them. That's very different. Don't do that ever. Don't get angry at your client. But try to find a common enemy to get mad at. Like, you're right. I am tired of these appraisers. It is no fun. We find a willing buyer and a willing seller, and we get a price that everybody agrees to, and then this neutral third-party appraiser comes in and breaks the whole deal up. It's the worst part of my job too. Now my seller realizes that I get it. I provided him validation for being angry. So guess what? He'll calm down now. because now he knows I'm with him. I'm with you. I agree. We're on the same team, buddy. These guys are jerks. But what are we going to do about it? Now he's going to be ready to start talking about a solution because he realizes that I validated his anger. That's matching tonality and pitch. I kept you guys a while today. So that's the R. That's neurolinguistic programming or natural language processing, however you want to call it, through mirror and matching, physiology, speech rate, volume, tonality, pitch, embedded commands, tie downs, downswings, trial closes. We went through the gamut.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Real Estate Trainer Podcast, sponsored by Eisenhower Coaching and Consulting. For more information about real estate coaching or to watch Brian's training videos, check out therealestatetrainer.com or find us on social media. And remember, don't forget to subscribe to this podcast so you get the latest episodes as soon as they're available.